Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is Charlotte, and you're watching Going In Raw. That sounds terrible.
What's up? This is the most must-see WWE superstar of all time and his lovely, gorgeous wife.
Marie.
And you are going in Raw.
What's up? It's your girl, Sasha Banks, the legit boss, and you are watching Going In Raw.
Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. And you are tuned in to Going In Raw right now. How you doing?
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw, untitled pay-per-view review show. So we don't have a name for this yet.
And no.
So here's the deal. We felt that sometimes two countouts per weekend was a bit much.
Yeah.
And it's not to say we'll never do that again, but we're kind of reserving the Sunday spot for kind of whatever we want to do. Sometimes we'll bring on guests like we did with James Willems.
Correct.
Last week, I believe. Sometimes we'll do two countouts if there's like a best worst list that's appropriate.
Yes, sometimes we'll take a look at old pay-per-views
mm-hmm.
and talk about them.
Absolutely. And so when considering the first pay-per-view we're going to look at, oh, by the way, we don't have a name for this show.
But if you have any ideas, please share them with us on mm-hmm. Twitter at RealGoingInRaw.
Absolutely. So for, you know, considering, we like the goofier aspects of wrestling, for one thing. So the most goofy phrase, perhaps, in the history of WCW might have been Judy Bagwell on a pole match.
Yes.
And so that got us thinking maybe we should review WCW's New Blood Rising from August of 2000.
Which featured the Judy Bagwell on, supposed to be on a pole initially, but Judy Bagwell on a forklift match.
That's correct. Now, here's the weird thing. So our good buddies over at What Culture, I believe
yes.
you said, listed this as their the second worst pay-per-view
ever.
Ever.
Behind Heroes of Wrestling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard that's a real cluster.
Yeah.
I actually was halfway entertained by this pay-per-view, and not always unintentionally.
Yeah, I think the worst thing about this whole show is there was just too many gimmick matches. If most of these matches had just been straightforward matches, it probably would have been okay.
Yeah, which, I mean, literally, WWE does it every year with TLC.
Yeah.
Every match is like a gimmick match.
But these are like ridiculous gimmick matches.
Oh, this was, look, man, when they go to the Viagra on a pole.
Anything on a pole match.
Anything on a pole, which Vince Russo, you know, has the...
was enamored with for some reason.
He loved that stuff. Yeah, you're getting into some really like gnarly territory. But that being said, a lot of the matches, the way they were booked, like if you take the gimmicks out, there was actually some quality stuff here.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure. See, when I remember New Blood Rising, when I think of that name, I thought that was part of the New Blood angle when Russo vacated all the titles. I think it was him and Bischoff came in, vacated all the titles, and then put them up for grabs. And so you saw stuff like Billy Kidman fighting Hulk Hogan. You saw like the rise of guys like the Natural Born Thrillers, I think they were called, which is all those like Jim Drake, O'Hare, all those guys. And again, I know like my WCW history is kind of like, you know, it's jumbled a little bit.
Yeah, we used to watch, both of us used to watch WCW a lot in mm-hmm. 97, 98,
mm-hmm. 99. Yeah.
And then when it started going bad,
yeah,
we kind of just focused most of our attention to WWF, but still would on occasion watch WCW's.
WWF was so good.
Yeah, WCW's product.
Yeah.
But I don't think we really watched any other pay-per-views probably after 99.
Yeah, no, I don't think we did. I remember, especially like after this, like sort of heading into the final 12 months, I kind of kept one eye on WCW mm-hmm. and just remembering how much of a train wreck week to week on Nitro it really was. That being said, watching this pay-per-view, I was actually, you know what? This isn't that bad. I also thought that it was branded cool. It had a cool logo.
It did.
It used that font like the old... Did you ever have
yeah,
one of those
yeah,
old
yeah,
label
the
guns?
Label makers,
those
yeah.
Label makers, yeah. I wonder if they still make those.
I don't know.
Those always look so... Like the font for Label Maker is really cool.
It is.
They offer that font.
I know.
Online, on internet.
Yes.
So anyways, the show opened up. Actually, there is a... this is the funny thing about this, though. It's called New Blood Rising. Who exactly was the new blood?
I don't remember.
In this?
I don't know.
Because the main event, or not the main event, but the second, like the number one contender three-way dance was, well, the main event was Booker T versus Jeff Jarrett. Booker T could kind of be considered new blood-ish in terms of being a fresh face with the title.
In the main event scene, yeah.
In the main event scene.
He had been a singles competitor for the most part for a couple years before.
A couple years before this.
He had
this.
That best of seven series against Chris Benoit, but yeah. Probably back in 97, 98.
Right. There is no way Jeff Jarrett could be considered new blood.
No.
I don't believe there is no way he's considered
zero.
New blood.
He said, they said during this pay-per-view that he had already held the world title twice prior to his match against Booker T.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin Nash can't really be considered new blood.
Old blood probably, but not new.
Yeah, yeah. He could barely move around. DDP literally wasn't on the show.
No.
But I think it was because he was probably injured.
Yes.
Probably. I don't know. But I know he was still a featured player.
Yes.
In WCW. So I don't
Sting know. Sting was barely on it.
Sting was barely on this. Yeah, he squashed
the demon, the
kiss demon. That's right. Buff Bagwell, yeah, you can kind of consider him new blood ish. No, you don't think
he
so?
He was like one of the first dozen people in NWO. He had been around for years.
Okay, all right, that's fine. Okay, so if you consider, yeah, I know it's funny because then they put a lot of, I think, who they consider new blood into like these giant cluster matches. So let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, start from the beginning.
So we start. It's funny because my notes start off pretty extensive and then they get really thin towards the end because, like, man, this is like a 2 hour, like a 3 hour affair.
Almost 3 hour show, yes.
So we had three count, which was Hurricane Helms or Shane Helms at the time.
Yeah, Shannon Moore.
And Evan Courageous.
Yes, against the Young Dragons.
Who's Jimmy Wang.
Yeah.
Who had some success in WWE. Jamie Noble.
Yeah.
And another guy, I don't know his name. I forget.
I believe it was Kaz.
Kaz something or other?
Yeah.
Oh, a three count also had Tank Abbott.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. If you strip away the stupidity.
Kaz Hayashi.
Oh, there you go. If you strip away the stupidity of them coming out and singing a really stupid song and Tank Abbott singing, like, say what you will about Tank Abbott. He was terrible, but at least the guy, like, you could have booked him strong.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you could have booked him like a threat.
Oh, yeah.
But instead, they packaged him with three count.
He at least looked like he was having fun.
Yeah. But he was like the only one in that angle who was having fun with that.
Yeah, three count and like they were having
fun. I don't think they were having that much fun. Anyways, this was like they dangled a recording contract and a platinum record.
Gold record.
A gold record dangling and above the ring. So whoever
got both of those won the match. The Young Dragons wanted to get the recording contract so that would prevent three count from recording music in the future.
Right, right. Which made them the faces.
Yes.
Three count would be the heels because
yes.
They're terrible. That being said, this is kind of funny too. There was an opening video package before all that. It showed called New Blood Rising, but the video package that
with
promoted
pretty much
it,
all Jeff Jarrett.
It was Booker T, Nash, Steiner, Goldberg, Jeff Jarrett. And then at one point, non-ironically, Tony Schiavone says, "This is going to be a train wreck." Which is awesome. Then they cut to like some fans outside and they were all like bros. They're all like, and this is in Vancouver. So I was always like, man, the Deep South. Well, no, it's Canada.
But yeah, this ladder match was fun.
It was a fun match.
Creative spots, a couple of good high spots.
I felt like all these guys could have hung with like the Hardys.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They just didn't do, they did some creative stuff. It's just, I feel like maybe WCW didn't want them to sort of ape the extreme.
Well,
stuff.
I think here is the thing is that this match concentrated on speed and creativity versus high spots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
High spots, especially in ladder matches, take time to set up.
Yeah, sure.
And this match, and I will give this whole pay per view in that respect credit. There was really no let up. As soon as the match ended, they went to another segment immediately.
Okay.
There was no cut. There's one cut to the comment or two cuts to the commentating team to break up a match from another segment. By and large, it was a bang, 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 bang.
This
kept
was
going.
Kind of my
fast
problem
pace.
With that, though. With the exception of the two final matches, there were no video packages to set up what
story
the hell had happened beforehand.
I don't think it would have helped much anyways.
I kind of wanted to know why Judy Bagwell's on a forklift, to be honest with you.
Actually, the only time that it confused me was during the fatal four-way tag match.
The tag match was confusing as hell.
Because I didn't know the dynamics were between everybody.
Why were the Filthy Animals wearing the tag titles as referees, and yet Chronic were the champions?
That's confusing.
I had no idea what that was all about. So that was weird. I found this odd side note on Wikipedia about Evan Courageous and Bill Goldberg.
Oh, this is right after the show.
This is, yeah, like, yeah, a week, like 2 weeks later or so. Before the September 5th, 2000 Nitro, Goldberg was backstage with Kevin Nash when Evan Courageous walked up to shake Goldberg's hand. Goldberg was slow to acknowledge Courageous, and apparently Courageous took offense to it and said something to Goldberg. In response, Goldberg grabbed him by his throat and pinned him to the floor, choking him. Goldberg apparently later tried to apologize, but Evan Courageous refused, which made Goldberg angry again, but nothing came of that. That's great.
Wow. This is an interesting note from the same thing you have pulled.
Yeah.
On a side note, Three Count was told by management they would go over Chronic to make up for the incident, but Chronic refused to sell for the smaller wrestlers.
There was nobody there. There was no Vince there saying, "What? What do you mean you refuse to sell?
I know.
You're fired." Anyways.
And it's amazing to me that Chronic had that level of stroke.
Well, okay, let me ask you something. Let's talk about Chronic briefly. Were they over?
Their name was over.
Okay, we'll talk about that when we get there. I have a lot of questions about Chronic.
But again, this match was fun.
Yeah.
The Young Dragons got the gold record first.
Yeah.
And there was actually a pretty well-coordinated spot where one of them fell off the ladder, it looked like, and in the process lost the handle on the gold record, and Tank Abbott caught it rather seamlessly.
Yeah.
It was a well-coordinated, well-executed spot.
Yeah, it's hard to do those things.
Yes.
Like, usually they'll mess it up.
Yes, and then Three Count got the recording contract. And I guess Evan Courageous wrestled this match on a bad ankle.
Oh, God.
He had some sort of ankle brace on.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that, too.
They referenced it in the commentary.
There were a couple kind of nasty spots in here. There was one where, like, I think it was Shannon Moore got, like, I don't know, suplexed or something into the ladder, and, like, his ankle got caught up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. There was that powerbomb off the ladder, again. I think, again, on Shannon Moore, that looked like he was maybe 6 inches from landing on his head.
Oh, yeah. Some of that was kind of nasty. Good match, though.
Yeah, it was.
When I started watching that, like, before it even started, I was thinking to myself, this is probably going to be the best match of the card.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Next up, we had the Filthy Animals, who was Rey Mysterio, Conan, Juventud Guerrero. Oh, by the way, an unmasked Rey Mysterio.
Yes.
That's a bad move doing that. Juventud Guerrero, Disco Inferno, who actually was fairly funny.
Yeah. And Tigress
from the Nitro Girls, who had disbanded at this point. They were in the office of Ernest Miller. We're both huge fans of the Cat. And they were trying to explain to him why they should be, I think, referees for the cluster F match.
The four-way tag match, yes.
I didn't really understand a lot of it. Again, no video package to explain it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I trust in Ernest Miller.
Well, they were trying to make a deal in exchange, get a tag title shot the following night on Raw.
Right.
And so the Cat agreed to their terms.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, that's right, yeah.
And allowed them to referee the match.
Right.
But following that segment, the Cat himself had a match against the Great Muta.
Four-time IWGP heavyweight champion.
A legend.
If you look at the list of accomplishments.
It's pretty awesome.
It's massive.
He's one of, I think, three wrestlers to hold the NWA world title and the IWGP heavyweight title at the same time.
Yeah. Lost to Ernest Miller in less than 7 minutes. By the way, Ernest Miller was a comedy act.
I know.
but for some reason, Great Muta was in a tag team match and ended up winning the titles later on in the night.
So it wasn't a complete loss for Muta.
What? Was there nobody else backstage that could have taken that spot? Was this the finish to a grudge between Ernest Miller and Muta?
Again, if we had video packages, we might know the answers to these questions. But they were not forthcoming.
Were they just trying to get their money? Was Muta paid for the night?
Why did Chronic, after retaining the tag titles, agree to defend them later on the night? They didn't have to do that. They had a match the next night in Nitro against the Filthy Animals.
Hold on. We're going to get to that in a second. Next up, we had Positively Canyon, who I believe was doing a DDP gimmick.
Yes.
He was ripping off DDP. Again, no video package, so I don't know.
No, but I kind of put that one together.
Yes, so did I. Then Judy Bagwell was brought out tied to a forklift.
And the commentary team explained that originally it was supposed to be Judy Bagwell on a pole.
Yeah.
And then Mark Madden made some really tacky comments.
Mark Madden made a tacky comment?
He made a wealth of them during this show.
Pretty much when he opened his mouth, it was to make tacky comments.
I know. It was really bad. The commentary, especially during this match, was bad.
Well, okay, here's the thing, though. because I always liked Shivani, to be honest with you. It was just he was given horrible things to say.
Yes.
Like, it's not his fault. He had to say things. But play by play, he was a pretty decent.
Yeah, he was decent.
Yeah, it wasn't his fault. He said Mankind couldn't put asses in.
Yeah, stuff. That's not his fault. Mark Madden was not good.
He was not good at all. And Scott Hudson always had this look on his face like he was pooping his pants.
Yeah. He always had a good voice.
Yeah, he had a good voice. But again, the things they were saying. And Vince Russo was obviously, because Vince Russo loved the idea of, oh, it's a shoot. Oh,
yeah.
And so they were always doing these really forced.
I know.
Shoot. Oh, this is what really happened here. This was a shoot.
Well, they're using
legit,
you know,
heat.
Wrestling jargon like that.
He's
like,
got legit heat.
Stuff about being put over, stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. It was so awkward. So, anyways, Canyon comes out. He calls Judy Bagwell something like a fat sack of trash or something like that. A big fat whale. I don't know what it was.
I don't remember what it was either.
It was very rude. But he was a heel.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, was Mark Madden supposed to be the heel commentator?
I guess so, yeah.
Well, still, he was awful.
Yeah, no, awful. He was absolutely terrible. So anyways, my favorite part of this was, so Bagwell knows that he's got this Judy Bagwell on a pole match coming
up. Oh, and
up.
He's searching backstage for his mother.
And he never, like, how did he lose contact with his mom to long enough for her to be strapped to a forklift, evidently willingly, I'm assuming, and then wheeled out there? Because he's looking around sort of half-heartedly backstage. Yeah. He happens upon a TV which shows her.
Like, didn't he know his match was scheduled at that point in the card?
Right. Why isn't he at Gorilla knowing that she's being wheeled out there?
Here's the thing.
If this is the big shoot thing, why wouldn't he know this stuff?
Here's the thing. Like, Judy Bagwell being on the forklift really had no bearing on the match whatsoever.
Zero!
Because typically, pole matches, you know, whatever's on the pole, the winner...
You capture it.
They capture it off the pole, they win the match.
Yeah.
So, if you use that logic...
Yeah.
Granted, it's WCW in the early aughts, logic doesn't apply.
Yeah.
Then the winner of that match should have been the competitor who lowered the forklift and got Judy Bagwell off of it, correct?
Correct, yes, yeah, absolutely.
That should have been
yeah.
how the match was determined. It was not.
Yeah.
It was a standard match.
Here's the thing that I love. Okay.
Which Judy Bagwell had an elevated platform by which to watch the match.
So Buff Bagwell sees the TV. He gets concerned. So when you see him appear at the top of the ramp, he does, it's like me jogging, okay?
Because yeah.
When I go out for a run, this guy doesn't run. He walks most of it.
He ambles.
But yeah, I amble around the neighborhood and scare people. Buff Bagwell was barely doing that. He was kind of jog sauntering to the ring.
Complete lack of urgency.
Big Vito showed more urgency running out to save Kidman from being murdered by Shane Douglas later on. We're going to get to that later.
Yeah.
So Buff Bagwell kind of saunters to the ring and starts to bring the forklift down, evidently eschewing the fact that he should be winning the match to do that.
Well, maybe he thought that he did win the match.
Because okay.
By pole match rules, that would be applicable.
He's like, why is that guy in the ring when all you have to do is hit this lever?
Canyon comes out, keeps him from doing it.
Yeah.
It's a decent enough match. I remember Chris Canyon was a pretty fun wrestler.
Oh, I like Chris Canyon. Yeah. And I actually kind of like Buff Bagwell wasn't a bad wrestler.
He wasn't very good, though.
He was just a grating personality.
But he wasn't a very good wrestler.
I'd say he was like, okay, if like it's red, yellow, and green, I'd say he's firmly yellow. You'd say he's an orange?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'd say he's
yellow. I was never impressed by his work.
All right. You didn't like the Blockbuster?
No, that's a good move.
Yeah, I like the Blockbuster.
But, I mean, like, one move does not a wrestler make.
That is true. Unless it's the Stunner.
Or the Rainmaker.
The Rainmaker. So, anyways, yeah, the match was what it was. At one point, David Arquette comes down.
Yeah.
Former WCW champion.
Yes.
David Arquette comes down to evidently...
Help Canyon?
Because
remember, David Arquette turned on DDP during that three-tiered cage match.
Mm-hmm.
Helped Jeff Jarrett claim the WCW title, I believe.
Okay, right.
So, Canyon was doing his DDP thing, but I think he was at odds with DDP.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm just kind of putting it together based on what we
saw
because there was no video package to develop these stories for us.
I do have this note here. The Buff and Canyon ended up going out into the crowd and a couple people touched Buff on his back. I don't know if they'd really want to do that. I wonder if, like, what Judy Bagwell thinks these days, that her son is an escort for old women.
I don't know.
Like, her friends could rent her son. Yeah, I also have a note here. Canyon is wrestling with his shirt on.
Yeah.
I thought that was strictly a Vince McMahon thing, but maybe Vince Russo picked that up from Vince McMahon. You know, that's why Baron Corbin wrestles a third with a shirt on, because allegedly Vince doesn't like his physique.
Oh, really?
He's got a weird like line for a belly button.
Well, I think also, you know, Baron used to be probably work at a heavier weight when he played football.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know,
he's thinner now, so.
I think he looks great.
No, I think he looks good, too.
Somebody had a sign that said pubes, so that was good. They're also, so Canyon had a move that they refer to as the diamond neck breaker. And it was kind of, it was like a neck breaker, but it was like sort of as a diamond cutter.
I'll be honest, it looked like a botched move.
I thought it should have been a finisher. I thought it was rad. I thought it was great. So Canyon's head
hits the exposed turnbuckle because he takes a pair of pliers and cuts the turnbuckle pad off.
But then it's turned around on him. He gets hit by the exposed turnbuckle. Only got a two count.
And then Canyon hit the Canyon cutter.
Which should have like been.
I mean, it's a diamond cutter.
Buff should have been RKO. Down for a long time. Been it. But he was only down.
He kicks out somehow.
Yeah.
And then David Arquette comes out.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
He hits Buff with a hard hat.
Oh, yeah. People booed the crap out of Arquette, too.
Yeah.
They booed the crap out of him.
He seemed to be enjoying the heel heat, though.
Oh, yeah. He seemed to be having a good time. Dude, David Arquette knew he was in an impossible spot.
Oh, yeah.
He
yeah,
understood
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But anyways, he came out. There was a double blockbuster
on Canyon and Arquette.
Yeah, he got the three count. Buff takes his brings his mom down and leaves with her, and then Canyon drops a Canyon cutter. What are you laughing at?
On your notes here.
Which, oh, this right here.
Yeah, no.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there we go.
That one.
Yeah, Buff. Yeah, but Buff wins. And then, oh, yeah, a lot. Because they start, like, hugging. But one of the angles made it look like they were making out.
Ugh.
And then I put live sex show with Judy. Just kidding. It said they hug. I assume she cooks some cookies later and asks him to program her VCR. Yeah. So anyways, Buff won his mom back.
Yeah.
Won then, custody of his mom.
And then Canyon hit a Canyon cutter on Arquette.
The next part was my favorite part because a limo pulled up and Lance Storm with three titles got out.
Yeah.
How can you fault anybody in WCW for giving Lance Storm three championships at once? That is amazing. That's the best booking there's ever been in wrestling.
Oh, I know.
Lance Storm should have had all the titles.
All the titles.
At the same time, and he pulled up in a limo. It was like that pile of crap Booker T pulled up in. Compared to a limo, are you kidding me? Lance Storm had all the titles. Well, he had the hardcore title, the cruiserweight title.
And he had the U.S. title, which he rebranded the Canadian title.
And they all had Canadian flags, like stickers on them.
Yeah, it was great.
It was fantastic. Anyways, he shows up. Lance Storm is great.
Yeah, he is.
At this point, Schiavone proceeds to fat shame Mark Madden. I forget in what context, to be honest with you. Schiavone then announces that Goldberg, who was scheduled for a triple threat number one contender match against Scott Steiner
and
Kevin Nash.
Yeah, was injured in a motorcycle accident in Sturgis, South Dakota the day before. That's a couple thousand miles from Vancouver. Yeah, was Goldberg just going to fly in that morning?
I guess, man.
That's not a lot of room for error if your flight's delayed. You missed your match.
The great thing is the motorcycle accident that happened 24 hours before only ended up delaying him about 10 minutes into the match.
I know.
Or like 5 minutes.
Yeah, not even
that
long.
His music hits when like 4 or 5 minutes later, Goldberg comes out.
I know.
So it really wasn't that much of a delay.
No.
Let's see here. Yeah, where was Mike Tenay?
I thought Scott Hudson replaced him.
Why? That's not equal. That's not samesies. Where's Larry Zbyszko?
Well, he was replaced by Mark Madden.
Where's Bobby? God, that is not a good. Have you seen Mark Madden recently?
No.
Mark Madden. He looks like Steve Bannon. So old. So old.
Oh, goodness.
And that's probably even from like a long time ago. Look at that.
Yeah.
So old. That's weird lighting, though.
It is. Anyways,
where was I?
The four-way tag title match.
Oh, my God. This was so confusing. Okay, so it doesn't. Here's the thing, dude. If you're going to have eight people in a match, why would you ever put five people in as guest referees?
I don't know.
Because there was like the Filthy Animals were all wearing ref outfits.
Yeah, well, Disco Inferno was the referee.
Right, the primary.
And then everybody else on the outside was an enforcer.
Special enforcers.
And then Conan was on commentary.
Special enforcers aren't supposed to wear referee shirts.
No.
So that's annoying. Yeah, Conan on commentary. Let's see here. Yeah, so it was the Misfits in Action, which
yes.
was Hugh Morris, General Erection.
And Corporal Cajun, I think they called him.
I think it was Lash LaRue.
Yeah.
Okay, it was Lash LaRue. There was the perfect event,
which was Sean Stasiak and Chuck Palumbo.
And I can assume they got that name because they had maybe stolen the gimmicks from Lex Luger and Kurt Hennig?
Because they came out to sound like Mr. Perfect's music.
The Perfect. Okay, so Hennig is Perfect. And then Event, though. Where do you get Event
I don't
from?
Know.
I thought they did a thing with Luger.
Could be. Was Luger ever like the main event Lex Luger?
No, I don't think
so. You think it'd be the perfect package if they stole it from Luger.
So then you had Jindrak and O'Hare.
O'Hare was actually really good.
O'Hare was the standout guy.
Oh, yes.
And yeah, and then he ended up in the WWE. And I remember they were doing something kind of interesting with him, and then they just dropped him. They paired him with Piper because they didn't know how to proceed with his gimmick. And then Piper ended up leaving, and so they ended up getting rid of O'Hare, too.
Yeah.
O'Hare died a couple years ago. Yeah, it's a bummer. But no, he had a really great look. He was a bit on the generic side, but that's not his fault. And he had some really good moves.
Yeah, but
his Shauntan bomb was rad.
Yeah, but he had a decent he was decent at projecting a little bit of personality.
No, absolutely.
He wasn't boring.
No, he wasn't boring at all. He was a standout for sure. Jindrak, I was like, you look so NPC, dude. You're so generic.
Yeah.
Palumbo, was that the one, the Billy and Chuck? Chuck? Okay, that's Chuck Palumbo. He was okay later on WWE.
Yeah.
And then Stasiak, he's second or third generation guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they all look the same. But then O'Hare was kind of the standout guy.
Oh, yeah, he was. And then your tag champions were Chronic.
Chronic. All right. I have some questions about Chronic.
Okay.
Their finish maneuver, everybody knows that Chronic is another name for weed.
Yeah, and their finisher, which is a double choke slam, was called High Times.
Right. What else about them was weed themed? Number one, they do not look like stoners.
They do not.
They're stealing my Luke Harper, my dude Harper and Eric and Ember Moon gimmick.
Yes.
A, B.
Yes.
So their name is Chronic, but it's not spelled like Chronic. Their finisher is named after weed, but nothing else about them.
A weed periodical.
Right. What's it called?
High Times. It's a magazine. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I think RVD was on the cover.
Yeah.
What else about these guys?
I mean, well, here's another thing. When they came out, the lighting was green.
Oh. In their video package, did you notice any like paraphernalia?
No, you can't
imagery?
Do that. You can't do that.
But you can do everything else? There's no like weed leaves on them?
You can't do that. You can allude to it.
You can allude to it. They don't look like if it, honestly, if Misfits in Action, if yes. Hugh Morris yes. and Lash yes. LaRue.
I mean, they're wearing tie-dye.
Look totally like stoners, man.
Yeah.
They could totally be stoners. Yeah. They're the guys. Chronic, the stereotypical stoner. The stereotypical stoner is like your lazy guy. You know?
Yeah, these guys are both like 6'5", pure muscle.
Like they're anything but. These guys are probably in the gym 6 hours a day.
Yeah.
These guys are not like into weed. Who's doing this?
It got them over, though. They were over.
Do you think the weed aspect got them over? I thought they were over because they were just big badass dudes.
No, I think the name.
You think the name
was
alone,
a large part of it.
They could have packaged like a couple of piles of trash, called them Team Chronic, and everybody would be popping for them just because it's weed related?
Not just because, but I think that was part of it.
Wow. Maybe, man. People like weed.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, anyways, they even kind of got over with me, to be honest with you. They were so dominant. I actually really like Chronic. Even though I knew that them and Undertaker and Kane had like a terrible match
yes.
and that got them fired essentially.
Yes.
Anyways. Yeah, there's like so many people in the ring towards the beginning.
Well, and the end too.
Yeah. But like at the beginning when Disco started like running down the rules and I was looking around, I was like, Disco literally is the only guy who knows how to cut a promo. Like excluding Conan, he's on commentary.
Yeah,
Conan could cut a promo.
Oh yes,
that guy was rad. So, anyways, yeah, Disco lays out the rules. I noticed there was a child on somebody's shoulders in the foreground of the crowd, throwing up both middle fingers. He was probably like 11, which is semi. I mean, that's more acceptable than like 5, I guess. Still not acceptable in my book, but you know. And I was thinking, oh, man, Deep South, so classy. Oh, this is Vancouver, Canada.
Let me ask you something.
What?
So Disco Inferno was slow counting every 3 count.
Yeah.
Because I think, well, it seemed like they wanted
Misfits in Action. No.
No, Jindrak and O'Hare to win.
Oh, is that what they wanted?
I thought so. That's what I mean. This match was confusing in that respect. Because the wrestling itself was pretty decent.
Yeah, it was okay.
Just the story being told in the match was hard to follow, again, because there was no video packages.
No video packages.
What commentary was saying was that since the Filthy Animals had a tag title opportunity the following day on Nitro, I would assume they would want the easiest matchup.
Sure.
Which wouldn't seem to be Jindrak and O'Hare, because they're both very large.
I would think the easiest matchup would be Misfits in Action. Yeah.
But no. they were slow counting all the pin attempts, though.
I mean, you have to assume they had some sort of arrangement with them.
Yeah, some sort of deal.
Yeah, some sort of deal.
But anyways.
They really seem to be anti-Chronic, for one thing, which is, you know, they should be.
And anti-Perfect Event.
Yeah, and anti-Misfits in Action, even.
Yeah.
But that's weird, because I would think Lash LaRue, easy.
Yeah.
He's small.
Yeah.
Anyways, Chronic was booked incredibly strong.
Yes.
They were booked ridiculously strong.
And they hit high times on... Is it Palumbo?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And then Chavo came in.
He was Corporal Loco?
Something like that.
General Loco?
And then took the referee shirt off Disco Inferno, hastily put it over his head, and counted the three count.
Right. So Chronic won.
Yeah, storyline-wise, I didn't really get this match, but the wrestling was okay.
Did they hold up the titles at the end? Because I feel like they were still around the waist of the Filthy Animals.
Right.
Because that's what confused me later on when I looked. I was like, wait a second. Why are they coming out as champions now? I don't remember them holding up the titles. I was very confused.
Yeah, I was confused
too. Anyways, cut to Jeff Jarrett. I don't know what the deal with this was, but in all the video packages, which were plentiful for Jeff Jarrett, he was wearing bright colored dress shirts.
With the sleeves cut off.
With the sleeves cut off and tucked in. I can't think of a worse combo. There's no worse combo.
He tried so hard to be edgy and cool.
Yeah.
He was neither of those things.
He was not. Maybe he was like the forerunner of like the guy, well, he gets booze, so he must be a great heel.
Yeah.
You know, he was the forerunner of that. And just nobody wanted to see him.
No.
That's the problem with Jeff
Jarrett. But like all his promos when he tried to be edgy just sound so forced.
Oh, they're so bad. The corniest catchphrases. Corny.
Yes.
He was so cheesy.
Yes.
Anyways, he was so cheesy. I don't remember what he said. Anyways, out next was Tori Wilson and her dad.
The Franchise.
No, Shane Douglas. Tori Wilson and Shane Douglas. He looks so old.
Well, he probably
and
was.
And every time she had to kiss him, it was like she was kissing a toilet. That's what the look on her face was. Like she didn't. But he was reveling and he was like. He loved that, man. Especially that time she showed her areola to him. Anyways, also I noticed Shane Douglas' shirt, like the writing on the back looked like it was iron on.
I swore it was the same shirt he had in ECW.
Yeah, probably was. He probably made like five of them and rotated them.
I'm going to see if he has a pro wrestling tee shop. Continue.
Oh, that'd be great. Shane Taylor. I don't know who that is. Oh, there you go. That's 2003. Let's see here. And I heard the crowd. What's a chowd? I love this too, because Shane Douglas then cuts a promo on Billy Kidman and says, Billy Kidman, this woman doesn't deserve a punk like you. And I was like, wait a second. Don't you mean a punk like you doesn't deserve this woman? Because I think what he's saying is Tori Wilson doesn't deserve to be with Billy Kidman, like that's a big thing.
Yeah.
So he got that wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, he has a Redbubble shop.
Oh, this is his Redbubble shop.
It's a Shane Douglas Redbubble shop.
Apparently you cannot buy Shane Douglas merchandise any longer.
This was odd. The crowd started chanting CM Punk, but it was only 2000. So I don't know.
I don't think
weird.
That's the case.
You're probably right, but they were chanting something that sounded a lot like CM Punk. What made this worse is that it was a strap match, but Tony Giovanni had to make sure to tell us this was not the kind of strap match
where you had to touch all four corners.
Right, has structure.
Yeah, this is just a standard pin or submission match.
This is two guys.
Two people attached with the
with
strap.
Like a 50-yard length of
leather.
Of leather who had to beat each other
so
up.
So pretty much the strap was there to just be used as a weapon.
Yeah, the strap was there for Shane Douglas to literally try to kill Billy Kidman at the end of this match, which actually happened. Let's see here. Here is my note here. Kidman was better as a homeless guy, but at least he was over. WCW tried to make him a centerpiece of their half-hearted youth movement. It was kind of true. Like, they understood this guy could wrestle. This guy was young. He was over.
He just didn't have a lot of personality.
He didn't. But he had the underdog thing going for him, which kind of made up for that. And it was a matter of, like, WCW had so many good pieces that they simply didn't know how to use.
Yep.
They didn't know how to use them.
I know. And that's watching this show that really, you know, came to mind. There's a lot of good talent.
Yeah.
A lot of good talent that knew how to wrestle.
Yeah, I know.
And they just didn't know what to do
with it. They had no idea.
All these ridiculous gimmick matches they'd put together rather than just building logical, decent stories that featured quality wrestling that made sense. That's all you need.
There were no builds. They were not happy. Like, why didn't they just throw all the money in the world to keep Heenan and Zbyszko and Schiavone as their crew? Keep them around.
I know.
Just have them stay. Like, you need, when you watch wrestling, you need to know, oh, this is kind of like a home I can visit and enjoy watching this stuff. And if, like, there's a different mom and dad at the door.
Mark Madden was doing, like, dirt sheet stuff back then, right? Is that how he got hired?
That sounds probably right. I have no idea. I don't remember.
He didn't really add anything to the team.
No, he didn't. It was like, oh, we need one guy to be blatantly offensive.
I know. We just want to make the audience uncomfortable.
He was a troll.
Yes.
The definition of a troll.
Yes.
Anyways, yeah.
So this whole match was about a sex tape, right?
Again, no video package. I would have really liked it in this case because apparently, yes, what you said was that it's true. Shane Douglas said something about a sex tape. Was this a sex tape between Torrey Wilson and Billy Kidman?
That's what I gathered.
That's what I would think, too. Like, very attractive people. Wouldn't mind that in a video package. And it's WCW. They're doing whatever they want to these days. Like, Goldberg literally dropped an F-bomb on this pay-per-view. And 3 minutes in, this match was a terrible idea.
Yeah, it was not good.
It was bad. It takes Billy Kidman off his, like, flying stuff, which he's decent at. Shane Douglas is more of a brawler. And it was just them circling each other with this strap.
Occasionally hitting each other with it.
Yeah. Again, Franchise looked like he was wearing black dress slacks.
No, they were jeans.
Oh, were they black jeans?
Yes.
Oh, okay. They looked like dress shoes and slacks.
No, they were tennis shoes because there's... He looked like he borrowed one of the referee's shoes.
Okay.
They were just black tennis shoes.
A picture of Sean Spicer today, and it was outside some ceremony.
Apparently that was an old picture, and he had like a walking boot on.
Oh, okay.
That's what I read on Twitter.
Damn it.
True.
I wish it was. He was
wearing mismatched shoes.
Oh, that guy's a clown. Anyways, so at the end of the match, I don't even know who won.
Kidman did.
Kidman ended up
winning. He hit his, what does Christian call his finisher?
The kill switch?
Yeah, it was like that. He did that.
Okay, cool. Shane Douglas then...
Well, first, Kidman took the strap and started spanking Torrey Wilson with it.
Okay. I don't know why he'd do that. Like, if she's cool being with Shane Douglas, why does he have a pro? Was he talking about releasing... Something tells me this situation where Shane Douglas's actions were probably those of a face and Billy Kidman's were those of a heel.
I don't know.
Because if Billy Kidman, if this had to do with the sex tape, and it was Billy Kidman was in possession of the sex tape.
Yes.
Was he maybe threatening to release it to the public?
I don't know.
And that was supposed to be a face thing?
I don't know.
I don't know. No video package. We don't know.
We don't know.
Anyways, long story short, Shane Douglas then took the strap, wrapped around Billy Kidman's neck, and literally started hanging. Shane Douglas, it was kind of brutal looking. Douglas got up on the second, he put his feet up on the second rope in the turnbuckle. So he was bracing himself against the turnbuckle on the second rope. And over his shoulder, he had the strap, which was wrapped around Billy Kidman's neck, and Kidman was dangling from it.
Yes.
That looked horrible.
Yes.
That looked awful.
And then Vito came out.
With the fever, with like the sense of urgency I've never seen before. I mean, this was true love, like propelling him to go save Billy Kidman.
It was.
Which he did. Then somebody named Reno... got involved. He attacked Big Vito after Big Vito had done away with Shane Douglas, who literally flew at the ring. I was actually impressed.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen him move that fast in his entire career.
Me neither. Shane Douglas, like, he had some hops.
I know. He leapt over the top rope.
He really did.
And I think it was pretty much directly onto the mat outside.
It was, too. He didn't get on the apron.
No, it was
he
just
went to
one.
The mat and he totally. He just.
One fluid motion out of the ring to the mat and out.
Fluid motion is not something I would ever describe.
No, I'd never associate that with a franchise. And here it was.
Yeah, it was great. Anyways, Vito got then attacked by Reno while Kidman, you know, sort of started breathing again. Vito fended off Reno, who is a guy with no hair except for like a ponytail jutting out from the back of his head. Anyways, Vito got rid of him, and then he just cuddled with Kidman in the ring. They literally cuddled.
I know. Like that. They were friends.
You know, hey, love expresses itself in many ways. Anyways, cut to outside. Double J starts beating the shit out of Booker T with his own car.
Yeah.
Booker T gets out of the car. He's got a cell phone, an old Nokia brick strapped to his belt, which is amazing.
Yes.
Booker T looked like a very successful real estate agent. Gets out of his car, goes around to, like, to the back to get his gear, I'm assuming. Double J comes out of nowhere.
Ambushes him.
Ambushes Booker T.
And then Booker T.
By the way, why Booker T wouldn't have seen Double J's fluorescent glowing green shirt from a mile away.
Oh, I know.
Running at him.
But also we need to say that Booker T apparently had already had some sort of knee injury before this. And then Jeff Jarrett furthered the damage to that knee by using the car door as a weapon.
Yeah, well, yeah, he stuffed Booker T kind of half in the car.
In the passenger seat.
Yeah, and just started slamming the door on him. So, yeah, that looked like it hurt. Booker T just looked like he was being inconvenienced by everybody. He seemed like the most inconvenienced champion. Anyways, then we had a TNA match.
It was called an ROTC match. Remove.
Vince Russo was huge on the military sort of imagery, wasn't he?
Yeah, but it was remove something the camouflage.
Remove all the camouflage.
Well, all doesn't
remove,
start with O.
Remove of look, bro. Remove all the camouflage, Vince. All doesn't start with O. Look, bro.
Whatever. That's
they got
what they
big
called
boobies.
It. That's what they called it.
So Major Guns versus Miss Hancock. Of course, she's Stacy Keibler.
Yes.
Who is just like chock full of charisma and personality.
Yes.
And
charm.
She was amazing.
Charm.
Major Guns look like a weird sex robot from the 80s. Bizarre. Like no charisma. All these sort of floating parts on her. Both dolled up in sort of skin, like, but Keibler looked very classy in her camo outfit. Major Guns, just, you know, brutal.
Yeah.
And
leaving little to the imagination.
Leaving little to the imagination. I saw two instances of labia in this match. Literally, I did see some underparts. So the idea behind this match was you remove the camouflage and I think you move it to the mud pit.
The rules were unclear because they started the match. That's why I thought it was like the first person to have all their camouflage taken off would be the loser. But
right.
No, they were pinfall attempts. So you had to win by pinfall.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, you had to remove camouflage, but also go to the mud pit. Again, didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
Again, a rather silly and ridiculous gimmick match that was unnecessary.
At a certain point, like WWF did their fair share of this kind of crap too.
Yes.
But WCW was so nerdy about it. That's the thing. There was nothing cool about WCW. They were nerdy about everything. And just so, like, I mean, come on. Like, you know, okay, so Sable, when she took off her stuff and she had, like,
the handprints.
It was very, that was very clever. You know, handprints covering her nurples.
Yes.
Well, like, you know, contrast that with WCW, where, you know, Major Guns has, like, her first bit of underwear taken off. And then the cameraman, as she's laying down for a pinfall, like literally just, you know, gets the camera right at her nether regions. And I swear you see junk. You see actual vagina action happening. It's just crude.
It is.
It's like the Seinfeld thing. It was ugly. It was awkward naked.
Yes.
You know? So anyways, Major Guns picked up the win in the mud pit.
In the mud
pit.
Well, there is a spot where Miss Hancock was kind of standing tall in the mud.
Yeah.
Did a little dance and then, you know, like bent over due to like some sort of stomach pain.
Right.
Major Guns took advantage, got the pin.
Right.
And then it seemed like something was going on with Miss Hancock.
Yeah. And then a really bright haired, red faced kid, like 13-year-old, comes running out. I realize it's David Flair.
Yeah, it's David
actually.
Flair.
It's David Flair because that's Stacy Keibler's real boyfriend at the time. So, you know what? Maybe he's just like the most clever dude in the world. And she's like, you're really weird looking. And he says, just wait till I talk. That was like one of my favorite Louis C.K. routines was, no, just hold on. Let me talk to you for 10 minutes and then you'll see the appeal.
Yeah.
Maybe that was David Flair. He has a lot of, maybe she's just like, she's a big Ric Flair fan.
Could be.
And he has a lot of good stories.
Yeah.
Anyways, isn't that weird? Like David Flair and George Clooney sort of had the same girlfriend. That's weird.
That is weird.
Anyways.
But so he comes out and then the commentating team starts getting real serious.
Oh, yeah. Very serious. Very shoot-like.
Yeah. And they started saying, Stacey Keibler, you know, she's known as Miss Hancock here, but this is Stacey Keibler. This is her boyfriend, David Flair.
Yeah. Telling us the details.
Kind of, but they didn't go into details. I mean, it was the inference was that she had a miscarriage of some sort.
Like you say that as matter-of-factly. Can we repeat that, please? The inference was that Stacey Keibler had an on-air miscarriage during a pay-per-view. And they danced around this endlessly and used every line of thought besides, man, she might have been pregnant and just had a miscarriage. They literally didn't say those words, but they said everything around it.
They danced around
it. She's really holding her lower stomach area. Wow. She looks like she's in a lot of pain down there. I wonder why David Flair is so concerned about her holding herself right there.
That was awful.
It was so bad.
It was awful.
And then it showed her being carted off on a stretcher, a gurney or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Wait, gurney? No, stretcher.
Gurney? I think they're the same thing.
Okay. Isn't a gurney for dead people?
I don't think so.
Well, according to storyline, there would have been one dead person on that gurney. It was storyline. I can say that. Anyways, the funny thing is when they cut to her on the stretcher, she actually looked okay. She was like, I'm not sure she knew the camera guy was there because she was
like. Yeah, I thought that too.
And then David Flair runs into the frame and I'm like, why weren't you with her the entire time? Anyways,
so after that,
it
was the interview backstage with Vampiro trying to hype up the Demon for his match against Sting.
Yeah, so if you guys don't remember, the Demon, the Kiss Demon,
was a licensing deal WCW made with Kiss.
A promotional.
So Kiss could help, could try to sell some more records.
But like the deal apparently was like hilariously, like it was ridiculous. Like the Kiss Demon had to, I don't know why WCW thought this was going to benefit them at all.
Well, I mean, they also had RoboCop
That's true.
So.
Here's the thing. Vampiro, awesome.
Yes.
Muta, awesome. Kiss Demon, no.
No.
And wasn't Vampiro like hanging out with the ICP?
Yeah.
The Juggalos?
Yeah. He referenced the Juggalos at one point during his promo.
Again, not awesome.
No.
At all. He was getting him up for his match. And then it was Kiss Demon. I didn't even understand that he was going to be fighting Sting. But Sting rappels down the line. They shouldn't have been doing that at this time. This was a year removed from Owen. Don't do that.
Yeah.
No good. Anyway, Sting beat the living crap out of the Kiss Demon.
Yeah, it was like a minute long match.
Yeah, if that. Yeah. Got him with as soon as they got in the ring, essentially, Sting hit him with a scorpion death drop.
Death drop.
Yeah. Let's see here. Then Storm comes out.
No. Yes.
Yeah. With all three championships.
Well, actually, no. Mike Awesome comes out first.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mike Awesome comes out first. He gets, yeah. And then the champion, the three champion man, Lance Storm comes out, cuts an amazing face to Canada promo.
Yeah.
And says it's great to be back here in Canada in front of real wrestling fans, et cetera, et cetera. It's fantastic. Lance Storm could do no wrong.
And then he introduces the special kind of second referee for the match.
Yeah.
And the crowd was chanting Brett. They wanted Bret Hart.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But it was Jacques Rougeau.
Yeah.
Otherwise known as the Mountie.
The Mountie, that's right. People still kind of pop for him a little bit. I thought this was fun as hell.
It was pretty
funny. I will be completely honest with you. This to me was very entertaining. So they have a regular match. The first pinfall. So Mike Awesome like technically won this like what three times?
Yeah, he first he power bombed.
Yeah,
Lance Storm.
Mm-hmm.
Got the pinfall.
Got the three counts, but then Jacques Rougeau stopped the announcement from being made, had his Canadian wrestling rule book
and
pointed out that it has to be
a five count
to win. And so they restarted the match. Mike Awesome, of course, beside himself.
Mike Awesome got Lance Storm to tap out to a dragon sleeper.
Right.
Again, Rougeau stood up, talked to the ring announcer, said, no tap outs. You can only win by pin.
Yeah.
Based on Canadian rules.
Right.
And then there was one other pinfall where Mike Awesome was going to pin him, or pinned him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rougeau said no.
Got the five count.
Yes, but after the five count, there's a 10 count.
Yeah.
And if the person who was pinned got up during the 10 count, the match continues.
Right, exactly, yeah. And so this was, I thought this was really, really well done. So Rougeau gets up, and as the five count happens, or Mike, does the match continue at that point? Yeah, I think the match continued. Mike Awesome then got another five count. Rougeau gets up into the...
No, what happened is at some point they said, okay, there's a 10 count,
mm-hmm.
and whoever gets up at the end of that 10 count is the winner.
Right, exactly.
And then Rougeau got in the ring.
Rougeau got in the ring.
During that, and as Mike Awesome about to get up, while the ref had his back turned, he hit Mike Awesome, so he stayed down for the whole
but
10
I'll
count.
But I'll say this, it was very fluid.
Yes.
Because the shot was like the entire ring, both men down, both refs are standing side by side. The actual ref was counting to 10, And Mike Awesome gets up as the ref counts to 10 over here, and Rougeau like nails him.
Yeah.
Mike Awesome goes down. Lance Storm gets up by the end of 10.
Wins the match.
I thought that was very clever. I thought it was silly. I thought it should have been silly. It was. Of course it was overbooked.
Oh yeah.
But it's Lance Storm. I thought it was $1 million. I really did.
Yeah. Lance Storm was great.
Lance Storm was great. I like Mike Awesome too. He was good.
Yeah, he was.
Mike Awesome was a hell of a big man.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
After the match, Bret Hart came down.
Oh yeah, that's right. And everybody thought, oh, what's Bret gonna do? But they're in Canada, so of course Bret stayed true. This was after he had to retire.
Yeah.
And
they referenced that he had not been in the ring for about a year.
Yeah, for a while. And he looked sullen. But I think that might have been kind of in character while he was walking down. Like, you know, it was just a bummer what happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
He gets in the ring and he celebrates with Lance Storm and Jacques Rougeau.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, it was a lot of fun. Let's see here. Then
let's talk about this Kevin Nash interview. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody so disinterested in an interview before.
I've never seen anybody so disinterested in just being there. Because, like, even his match, he was so, like, Dude, he knew that Rougeau was trash at booking.
Oh, yeah.
He knew that the entire, like, the finish to the three-way. It was like he got told what the crap finish to the three-way was going to be.
Right before the interview.
Right before the interview, because he was so, he did not give one F about this interview. It sounded like he was literally just reading words because he had to read the words.
Yep.
So, anyways, after that, we had... Chronic again teaming up against Vampiro and Muta. Do we see when Chronic accepted their challenge?
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah.
There was a part where that happened.
I believe Chronic was the one that issued the challenge. Hold on.
Oh, that's great. Why would they do that?
Yeah, I believe Chronic was the one. Oh, yeah, because Chronic, here's what happened. During the Demon Sting match, Vampiro and Muta come out and attack.
Sting, and then Chronic comes out and
makes the save. Brian Adams grabs the mic and challenges Dark Carnival to a match later on the evening.
He should have said make it non-title.
Or just not do anything. Give a match the next day against the Filthy Animals.
Just beat them up there on the spot.
Yeah, you don't have to put your titles up.
Yeah. Anyway, so now it was Chronic versus Vampira and Muta, the Dark Carnival.
Yeah.
I like this. Muta gave the green mist to the ref.
Yeah.
And then looked kind of confused. He looked mildly confused about it. And then Vampiro and Muta ended up going over?
Yeah, because the Harris brothers came out.
Oh, that's right. The Harris brothers ended up coming down.
And then cost Chronic the titles.
Yeah.
Dark Carnival are the tag champions.
Yeah. Crowd at this point just seemed like dead. Like they were like, oh, okay, another title reign or another title change.
Well, I think they're just kind of probably over the overbooking of every match.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Scott Steiner came down. This was time for the three-way number one contendership match. Steiner came down. Man, you know, watching him in all his glory and seeing the crowd react to him, that dude was the freaking crown jewel. He really was. Talk about one of the most well-developed understanding of his own character. And it's one thing to take Goldberg... You take a big guy, and Goldberg had intangibles. He had charisma.
Oh, yeah.
He got over because of that and his incredible booking. I mean, you can talk about Goldberg as being, you know, a homemade WCW guy, and he totally was. Like, they really got lightning in a bottle there for the most, like, his ascent, they booked perfectly. The streak, But he also had, you know, the charisma. You know, Goldberg had charisma. He's got that special thing.
Yeah.
Steiner, to go from the Steiner brothers, who were, you know, magnificent wrestlers, a great, great Hall of Fame worthy tag team. And then when he turned on his brother, there really wasn't a lot going on in terms of character. Steiner built that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and all the Freakzilla stuff, all that kind of stuff, Big Papa Pump. It was so well defined. It was so well developed.
Yes.
By him, I believe.
Yeah.
And when you see him, you think, man, the pieces were there for something that could really challenge WWF.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that. It's just a matter of, you know, between him, Booker T, this was the stunning thing, was you had Guerrero, Benoit, Raven, you had guys like that, and they pissed him away.
Yeah.
So
Jericho.
Jericho. So it is
the giant.
It is absolutely sad that they really couldn't get their stuff together, their business together. But anyways, he came out, Nash came out looking, I mean, he looked like he was doing the rounds. He looked like he was just bored.
Oh yeah.
So Goldberg's music hits
Goldberg twice.
Goldberg does not come out. So it ends up being Nash and Steiner to start the match. They go into it. At a certain point, Goldberg does finally come out
with rib tape,
with lots of DDP's rib tape
and a chair
and
goes after Kevin Nash.
That's right. At a certain point, Nash gets Goldberg in the position for a powerbomb.
Yes.
Goldberg pushes out of it.
And just walks away like he's upset.
Nash looks like... Nash looks like he knows what he's supposed to do in terms of his performance, but doesn't really care to do it. He's giving literally the bare minimum because he understands how stupid it is.
Yes.
To book an angle where a guy refuses to take a move in a wrestling match.
Yes.
When a guy is booked to stop wrestling the match.
Yes. And not because he physically can't wrestle, because he decides out of character that he doesn't want to take a loss, essentially.
So, yeah, exactly. So then Goldberg starts walking up the ramp. Ugly Vince Russo comes down in a sleeveless shirt tucked in. I wonder where Jeff Jarrett got that from. With his gut and probably gold chain. And he comes down and he gets in Goldberg's face. Why would Vince Russo think he could get in Goldberg's face without Goldberg spearing him? We're trying to buy into this universe of yours.
Yes.
And you're yelling at Goldberg. Goldberg literally says, F you. We're trying to stay brand safe for YouTube money. So I can't say the word he said, but you guys can, you know, he didn't say fudge you.
Yeah.
He said the bad word. Like, clear as day on the pay-per-view. And they didn't bleep it on the network, so they dropped the F-bomb there. Because Russo says, get your ass back in the ring or some stupid crap like that.
And then the whole time the commentating team is again, just kind of talking around the idea that Goldberg refused to accept the finish of the match as it was booked.
As it was booked.
And then the rest of the match, like at one point, Nash does a DDT. And someone says, I don't think I've ever seen Nash do a DDT before. He's doing a really good job of improvising the rest of this match.
Yeah, they got Scott Hudson called Goldberg the big baby, the big crying baby we know he is. Like, the big cry baby, rather. And I'm like, I know what you're trying to do. It's not entertaining.
No.
It's not appealing.
No.
It's just
And I can only stupid. Imagine the live audience having to sit through that and think to themselves, what the hell is going on?
I know.
Because they're not getting the commentary.
They're
not getting the... They're not hearing what Russo and Goldberg are saying on the ramp.
Yeah.
They don't know what's going on.
No. I would be so... And I would be that little kid throwing up the middle fingers at everybody. It was so stupid. It's so bad. Anyways,
yeah,
Nash won. I kind of stopped paying attention. Nash won.
Yeah, he powerbombed Steiner.
Yeah.
So. Actually, a decent jackknife powerbomb.
Oh, yeah, was it?
Yeah.
I missed it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. Those are always fun to watch.
Well, when done well, yeah.
Then we had this great video package for Jeff Jarrett versus Booker T. And it looked like it was one of those that would run on the pay-per-view channel.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like addressing the audience.
Who was already watching the show. Right. It was trying to get an audience to watch the show. Right?
That's exactly what it was. So they were like sort of double dipping there. Again, they had lots of Double J in his sleeveless button-up shirt. And they called him the Chosen One. He's terrible.
He's not good. He's not a main event guy.
I like during the video package, they said, and his lethal guitar. No.
No.
It was just dumb. Anyways, they put on a decent match. Yeah, so was, like, I mean, look, I'll crap on Jeff Jarrett all day long. But, I mean,
Booker T, great.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
He's amazing.
He is amazing.
He's great. Jeff Jarrett. I mean, could you make the argument that, oh, people just want to see him lose? And he did indeed lose.
That's I think he got heat generally.
It was X-Pac.
Yes.
It was Jeff Jarrett heat.
Yes. Yeah,
totally.
It really was.
Yeah.
And the guitar spot in this match wasn't bad.
Yeah, he hit him on the knee while he was trying to do it. Yeah, there was a
ref bump and Booker T went to kick him. And Jeff hit him with the guitar on the bad knee, the knee that Jarrett worked over with the car door earlier in the night. In the end, there was a spot where Booker T gave Jarrett a bookend through a table outside a ring.
Yeah.
But Booker T eventually hit the bookend.
The bookend, yeah.
Picked up the win.
Yeah. And remained WCW World Champion.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, man, you know, so many good pieces there. It's if they had booked Goldberg right, if there was that one guy through like a 5-year span who just was the authority figure backstage,
who had a vision and who was allowed to follow through in his vision, had final decision making responsibilities.
And I let me ask you this. I believe that the right person in charge could have worked with Hulk Hogan, satiated his ego, and used him to get others over in a successful way. Do you think that would be possible? You think it's possible? I wonder who that person could have been.
Vince?
Well, yeah. Vince has his own company. I mean, could Ted Turner, if Ted Turner was more hands-on with WCW, you don't think he could have done that?
I don't think so.
No? I don't know who could have done it then. Vince is such a unique figure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who could have sort of reined in Hogan or, you know, worked with him to, I don't know. Well, Hogan was so upset. Hogan always equated having that damn belt, evidently.
Yeah.
With success, with his, you know, keeping his
profile. Top spot, yeah.
The top spot, yeah.
So I don't know if there would have been a way to have him in essentially a main event storyline that kind of existed above the belt.
Yeah.
If that would have been enough, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Interesting. I mean, there was a whole confluence of events that led to the demise of WCW, yes. But the talent was there. And you saw the influx of talent from WCW to WWE in the later year or the year after this when they got bought. And, you know, there are pieces there. Sean O'Hare.
Yeah, here's one thing I noticed. And Vince has a very distinct vision of what his product looks like in terms of the wrestling.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And he still seems, you know, it's the WWE style.
Mm-hmm.
And that still seems to persist to a certain degree today.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely back then, there's a very distinct WWE style. And WCW, for the most part, did a pretty decent job countering that, first with the cruiserweights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in like the mid-90s. And even during this show, you know, they were not afraid to work an extremely fast-paced match, the ladder match.
Yeah,
fast-paced.
Yeah.
The whole show, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
Just paced, just bang, 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 segment.
Yeah.
Not a lot of breathing room.
Yeah.
From that vantage point, in terms of stylistically, apart from the Steiner and Nash match, by and large, it was, in some ways, a more exciting style of wrestling.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because
yeah.
there was wrestlers that were incorporating a whole lot of styles. Like Vampiro was doing a lot of the striking stuff that we see now.
Oh, I like Vampiro, man. He's so good.
And, you know, you mentioned Sean O'Hare doing his Shauntan Bomb.
Yeah.
And he's, what, 6'6", probably?
Yeah.
Huge guy.
Yeah, it was great.
And we weren't really seeing that in WWF at the time.
Right, right.
So, yeah, if they had someone in charge who had the final authority on everything creative.
Yeah.
And didn't get involved in the politics backstage and had a vision for what the company should be doing, they could have still been, there still could have been some competition between the brands.
Yeah.
And it would have made
a lot of stuff. Heck, a lot more interesting.
Throw away like dollar after dollar. They brought in, they were still using Bruce Buffer or
Michael Buffer.
Michael Buffer to do the intros, and he cost a couple hundred thousand dollars, I think. Mm-hmm. What are you even thinking?
Wasting money.
This is wasting money. Brought nothing to the show.
Nope.
Brought nothing to it.
Nope.
So anyways, yeah, that's it. That's for our first review. Let us know in the comments what you guys thought about New Blood Rising.
Yeah.
And if you guys like this and you want to see more of it, let us know.
Not a great show, but better than I thought it was going to be.
Oh, for sure. I thought it was much better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Made me bummed out because, like, you know what? They really, even at that late point, might have been too late, might not have been, but they had the pieces there.
Yeah.
I mean, Hogan was gone. Hogan had, because of the Bash of the Beach, I think.
It was like the month or two prior.
Was it the Bash of the Beach or Great American Bash?
It was like the pay-per-view or two pay-per-views
before
this
that. Yeah. Hogan was gone. So they were, you know, they were sort of working with the cards that Russo had dealt them.
Yeah.
It's just that dude and his ideas, like he thought everybody wanted to be, oh, business exposed. Oh, that makes ratings. Like, no, man, that works
makes
in
things awkward
situations. Yeah. Like when Vince did it, it was always like reluctant, you know,
Yeah. It
was always reluctant. And that's what made it those little moments intriguing.
Yes.
So anyways, that's it for now. Let us know what you guys think. And until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.